Welcome to Interviews for Resistance. We are now into the second year of the Trump administration, and the last year has been filled with ups and downs, important victories, successful holding campaigns, and painful defeats. We've learned a lot, but there's always more to learn and more to be done. In this now weekly series, we talk with organizers, agitators, and educators, not only about how to resist, but how to build a better world. I am Sarah Jaffe, your host.
My name is Julio Lopez-Varona. I'm the director of Make Your Own Connecticut. I also work as a consultant with Center for Corporate Democracy, and I lead some of the efforts when it comes to head sweepers and their corporate accountability campaign on Puerto Rico.
Let's talk about Puerto Rico. To start with, what is the most important thing people should know about what's going on in Puerto Rico right now?
I would say things are not getting better, and they potentially could get worse. We are in a process of three austerity measures that are being imposed on the island, the privatization of our school system and our electrical grid, while at the same time, an exodus of people that are just fleeing the island because the island is not getting the resources it needs to rebuild. Companies and businesses are not being able to reopen, and that's just creating a spiral of economic decline that's making it very difficult for everyday Puerto Ricans to actually find jobs and sustain themselves.
Yeah. And so let's talk about the electrical grid first. There are still places on the island that don't have power, right?
Yeah, last I saw, the electricity was at about 73%. Mm-hmm. That being said, about 2 days ago, there was a blackout that left without power for about 10 hours most of the north part of the island. And we kind of know that part of the problem is that electrical grid is extremely unstable. Mm-hmm. It is running on generators. And, you know, we know that it's going to take a long time to rebuild the system. And one of the biggest concerns then is that it will get rebuilt to the same old, antiquated, and actually dirty energy that has been running the country for the last 50 years, and right. That tends to be extremely expensive and bad for the environment.
Yeah. And so the solution for all that is obviously to privatize it, right?
Yeah, for sure. You just privatize and magically everything becomes better.
Yeah, that's not how that works.
No, like what I think it's a long story, but I would say over the last 70 years, Puerto Rico's electrical grid hasn't been properly maintained. It is a crumbling infrastructure, and it's an infrastructure that got worse and worse because over the last 10 years, Puerto Rico was in an economic decline after some tax exemptions and other companies went out of the island. Puerto Rico started borrowing money, and the people that gave us money were hedge funds and companies that actually had been in places like Argentina and Greece, and those companies just held our economy hostage and pushed for austerity. And part of those austerity measures meant firing workers from the electrical company. It was about not maintaining the electrical company. It was about not maintaining infrastructure.
Right.
And then Maria came, and you have a failing infrastructure with 160-mile winds.
Yeah.
And what you get is complete and auto destruction of the electrical company. And for a lot of people that were interested and are in the government right now, mm-hmm. That are interested in pushing like capitalist neoliberal practices, it was mm-hmm. also the perfect moment to make the argument that this was bad administration of government. This was union members, mm-hmm. greedy union members. So right. The best option is to privatize and let another person, another private entity take over our natural and Puerto Rican resources.
Right, yeah. And this is, so we're talking about them trying to privatize Puerto Rico's infrastructure at the same time as Trump drops this infrastructure plan for the mainland that has some of the same characteristics.
Yeah, so what we're seeing is a trend that is, Puerto Rico is in many ways a microorganism of what's happening in other places. We're seeing this move to privatizing electricity, but at the same time, we're seeing this move to privatize education. In Puerto Rico in specific, it's crazy because it's everywhere. Like, the proposal is not like we'll privatize some. It's like they want to change and renew. That's those are the keywords they're using to the education system. And they're saying the only way they can do it is by providing charter schools and, if you know, a private electric grid, which has not been proven necessarily to actually improve the outcomes of students or actually be good for customers that receive those electrical services.
It also, I mean, we saw the privatization of the entire school district in New Orleans after Katrina. Yeah. That certainly has not improved anything. But also, it just seems, you know, when you hear it, you're like, what does privatizing the school district have to do with rebuilding after a hurricane?
I would say it's part of, it's like a lot of people have been talking about disaster capitalism.
Right,
and
yeah.
It's funny because you're like, you know, if you're one of those conspiracy theorists, you like start sounding like one and you're like, I just sound like a crazy person. And then the government over the last 2 weeks has just proven that the mass exodus of people is being countered by a mass like injection of rich people that are just buying everything and privatization of the electric company and like cutting union contracts. And you're like, oh, wow, like half of the things we thought were just going to happen in theory are now happening in Puerto Rico.
Yeah, and so talk about a little bit about the sort of exodus of people and where people are going and what's happening in the places where you have a lot of people, you know, showing up either temporarily or permanently to stay with relatives or to try to find jobs.
Yep, I think it's important to like just give context. Like, this has been happening for the last 10 plus years. Like, Puerto Rico lost 10% of its population over the last 10 years, and it goes back to the economic conditions and the economic and humanitarian crisis that I was referring to in two questions ago.
Right.
So the exodus has been happening for a while. What happened was that Hurricane Maria made it just clear that people couldn't live here. Like, if you go to Puerto Rico right now and you get on a plane, what you'll see is blue tarps everywhere, and that's because half of the houses don't have roofs. So people were without electricity, without water, without jobs, so they were forced to leave. Many of them went to stay with their friends and their family, and actually some of them were offered hotels by FEMA, and because Puerto Rico had no hotels that were working, or the hotels that were working were used by FEMA, they ended up in places like Hartford and Pennsylvania, Connecticut and Orlando.
Yeah.
And what has been happening over the last couple of months is that many of those people that still don't have a home in Puerto Rico, that have no basis in those places, are now being told that their vouchers are going to be running out, and they're just going to have to fend for themselves until they can figure it out.
Yeah.
And those people are moving, as I said, to mainly like Puerto Rican communities, although we've heard of some new communities that are not traditionally Puerto Ricans, like Texas, Arizona, and other places that are, interestingly enough, creating new like bubbles of Puerto Rican communities.
Let's talk about the Hedge Clippers connection, because as we were talking about Puerto Rico, there have been rich people looting Puerto Rico for a while. So talk about the work that Hedge Clippers and others have been doing, researching and acting around the people who own Puerto Rico's debt.
Sure. So the work with Hedge Clippers in specific, and my role with Hedge Clippers started about 2.5 years ago, give or take, after Alejandro Abascal Padilla, who was the governor, you know, he announced on the New York Times, like, we can't pay bondholders, and bondholders won't negotiate with us. So we started looking at who the bondholders were. And as I said earlier, it was very much similar, like the same bondholders that we had seen in places like Argentina and Greece. And a lot of people thought that was interesting, and we wanted to look at it. And what we found was that those bondholders not only lent Puerto Rico money, but they were now, in many cases, they were lending on 30 cents on the dollar, which means that you're, in some cases, getting a credit card that's 700% interest rate. So 30 cents on the dollar. So you pay a dollar for every 30 cents. And I think that that coalition of partners was really interested on the effect that this type of practice would have on a U.S. territory and how those practices would be could be replicated in the U.S. So I, as a Puerto Rican, started working with them to just like somewhat guide the work and talk about like how we talk about Puerto Rico and how we connect that to the U.S. And we've been doing research, and we started with hedge funds, but we've actually done research on banks. We've done research on pension funds. We've done research on big companies. And the idea, more than anything, is to hold accountable any corporation or hedge fund or whatever that's hurting Puerto Rico, with the focus, with the vision and the goal to change their practices. You know, what we find is that the government is fairly difficult to move, but these companies actually care about their images, so they're able to be moved. And I think there's like the Centro de Periodismo Investigativo and other Centro para la Nueva Economía and other groups have done a lot of research around like those corporate players that actually came to Puerto Rico because they knew that Puerto Rico's condition, the fact that it couldn't go to bankruptcy, the fact that it was run by the U.S. and the U.S. had a lot of economic interest in Puerto Rico, made Puerto Rico like a really good place to go to buy for cheap, to hold the economy, like sequester the economy to a point where they could push these really bad measures that were very, very good for the rich, while extremely bad for the poor.
I want to talk about what people can do, but sort of to preface that, when we're talking about what people can do and you sort of call your representative or whoever and say, we need aid for Puerto Rico, then the question becomes, what kind of aid is that going to be and in whose hands is it being placed, right?
And that's a hard question to answer. Like, right. If you ask me, it's incredibly important for Congress to put money forward.
Right.
You know, what we have been saying is that that money should not be conditioned to any more fiscal oversight, that it shouldn't come with more privatizations and more austerity. But your question is a valid one. So who manages the money? Is it the government that is imposing privatization and closing up schools and, you know, curtailing union jobs and everything? In many ways, it is. And some of us are thinking that there might be a need for a civilian oversight board and for something, but it's difficult. Like I can't really tell you like sincerely what is the way or the tool beyond like just getting people really mad and making sure they hold accountable the government to make sure that the government is not using that money to build the Puerto Rico that is like kind of Cuba in the 40s, where, you know, you come, if you're white and you have money, you come to Puerto Rico to bathe and to have big houses, and the rest of us are just, you know, working for those people.
When I talked a couple months ago, I guess I talked to Javier Murillo about this, and we were talking about, he was saying, you know, the playbook for what capital is going to do in these situations is sort of written. We know they're going to come in and try to privatize everything, but we don't have the sort of shock doctrine from the left. And so when talking about what to do here, I guess that's the question of like, instead of privatizing everything, instead of, you know, letting rich people make Puerto Rico into just a playground for rich people, what are the arguments people should be making?
The problem is that right now, when you look at the powers that be and the people that we're electing, they don't necessarily look different from each other. And that creates an issue of like, what is the left? And, you know, what are we fighting for? And do we have leaders that actually can push for those things in a moral and actually like standoffish way? And we don't. And I agree, we need to create some sort of vision for the future from the left that actually puts forward these like very clear principles that we should follow, but that's not here right now.
Yeah.
And we end up just choosing like two of two or three, whoever is the best of those. But yeah, I agree. We need to figure that out. I don't know if that's an answer, but it's true.
Yeah. Yeah. And so what can people do? How can people get involved with the work you're doing, the work other people are doing, to make sure that, you know, people are paying attention to what's going on?
I would say, well, there are many ways. You know, the Head Swiffer campaign is all, like we are right now, we're working with students on divestment campaigns and trying to connect investments that universities are doing, mm-hmm. and are hurting Puerto Rico into like student power. You know, as a person that works with CPD, the Center for Popular Democracy, mm-hmm. we have our partners, Make the Road and others that actually are super invested in, you know, organizing from the ground up to get people activated. You know, there are coalitions like the Power for PR Coalition that actually brings together a very clunky but interesting group of organizations that are fighting for Puerto Rico. So I would say, if people have questions, they're happy, like I'm happy to answer those questions for them, and they can call me and I can direct them the right way.
Mm-hmm.
But usually if you're in a state that has a lot of Puerto Ricans, there will be organizations that in some way or another are doing work. And it depends. Do you want to do relief work? Do you want to do activism work? Do you want to take over a corporation and make them look like, I was going to say a bad word, like make them look bad?
Mm-hmm.
There are options. I think what people need to do is just get informed, look at ways in which they can get involved in their communities, and, you know, reach out to people like me, and we'll be happy to, like, connect them to whatever activism is happening.
And so how can people keep in touch with you?
Social media, just if they go to Twitter, is J-U-L-O-P-E-Z, B as in Victor A. That's my Twitter handle, and they can reach out to me there. And I am more than happy to provide direction on where to go, depending on what people are excited about. But I would say if you have a voice, you should use it, because if not, Puerto Rico is going to be in even worse condition in the following years and months. And our people in the island and outside of the island are going to suffer a lot. So we need to do something now.
Interviews for Resistance is a project of Sarah Jaffe with assistance from Laura Fayebois and support from the Nation Institute. You can find more information at necessarytrouble.org. Thanks for listening.